good afternoon, and welcome to Word of Mouth. I'm your host, Jim Wunderlich, and today, my guest is Terry Dreher, a career ICU nurse turned private professional patient advocate and owner of North Shore Patient Advocates, which has been operating in the Chicagoland area since 2011. Terry left the hospital setting to devote her time and energy to helping people navigate modern healthcare complexities. And Terry, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thanks, Jim. I've really been looking forward to this. It's a pleasure.
Well, I tell you what, lots to talk about, and I guess maybe the first question I have for you is, what is private professional patient advocacy? And maybe there's a part two to that as well. Why would someone hire his or her own nurse advocate? So that's kind of a mouthful there, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about the what you do.
Sure. Well, I'm really proud of being a part of the spearheading group that is developing this new industry. This is like the hottest thing in modern healthcare right now. And basically, it has come about because people are lost, confused, frustrated, and afraid with all the changes in modern healthcare. So someone might consider hiring someone like me if they didn't have a nurse or doctor in the family, if they didn't have family close by that could advocate on their behalf if they got in trouble. Because it's really hard when you get sick and go into the hospital and you don't have anybody with you. Sometimes if you're not conscious, you really can't make decisions on your own behalf. So it's really nice to have a professional person standing by your side that can help interpret the data you're being given, help spend an extra amount of time educating, telling the physicians and nurses all of the pertinent data about your background. So it's for people that really need or want that extra blanket of protection, safety, and education.
You know, what's interesting, like you said, a lot of people don't have a family member.
Right.
So who do you turn to?
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting now, interesting to me is that now an industry is coming about because of this. In other words,
oh, yeah.
I'm kind of curious about the private, or I should say the private patient advocacy industry. The fact that this is now an industry is interesting. And so are there educational requirements to become a patient advocate?
Well, that's a whole can of worms right now. But first of all, I want to differentiate between a patient advocate who works for the insurance company or works for the hospital.
Hmm.
Okay, so what I really want to tell people is follow the money if you want to know who is really working for you. Patient advocates in hospitals today sometimes are not even medical people. They have no medical background. They work for the risk management department of the hospital. And so their job is to kind of calm down frazzled patients and their families so that the hospital doesn't get into any trouble and to kind of smooth things out. And it's kind of a concierge little service, but they don't really advocate primarily for the patient. They are kind of a liaison between hospital administration and the patient. And if you are a patient advocate that works for an insurance company, well, all I can say is that's an oxymoron. They're there to save money for the insurance company and to prevent the patient who's calling upset or having questions from getting through to the real key decision makers. So when a nurse is working for an insurance company, her job is to save money for the insurance company. So it's an allegiance factor, really. And our industry is coming up, and we work in a similar way to the way attorneys do. In other words, we work up a contract with a retainer and everything. So when patients really pay us, they're the only ones that we're really focused on.
Hmm. Okay. So, and with your background as a career ICU nurse,
yes,
you've seen both sides of it.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to just back up a bit. What triggered your interest to more or less jump into this field? And I take it you're no longer an ICU nurse anymore in a hospital setting.
Mm-hmm.
So why the change or how that all come about? I'm just kind of curious about how the shift occurred.
Well, several things. One thing, starting about 10 years ago, I started to see a lot of changes on the inside of hospitals that I didn't think were necessarily in the interest of the patients. It became much more about charting, documentation, protection of liability. The new mantra was, if you didn't chart it, it didn't happen. And so a huge landmark study came out in 1999 called To Err is Human. And it was the first large-scale study ever done that showed the actual medical error rates in hospitals. And it was frightening. It really rocked the hospital industry to their very core, and everybody went running around trying to figure out ways to increase patient safety. But it was kind of an upside-down situation because all of these things required more time from the nurses and physicians. So I was in the middle of this looking and saying, wait a minute, I used to only spend 1 to 1.5 hours a day documenting, and now I'm spending 8 hours or more out of every 12-hour shift on the computer. And to me, that's a no-brainer. Patients do not get safer care when the doctors and nurses are being taken away from the patient's bedside. It just can't happen.
Like you said, it's kind of a double-edged sword, though, because there, you know, statistically we have, is it cancer, heart disease, and then medical error is the number three cause of death. I remember when all those statistics came out years ago, so you can see why they'd want to document all this, but kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. So where do you, it's kind of a hard balance, I would think. Well, hospitals, too.
It really is a tough balance, and certainly the healthcare system we have in this country right now is not so self-sustainable. I mean, Americans like their healthcare. They feel entitled to the best and the cheapest, and it's become a consumer-driven industry. So I'm not saying I'm against the Affordable Care Act by any means, because we can't continue to spend this kind of money on healthcare. But what I am saying is that I think someone should have asked more doctors and nurses about the practicality behind a lot of the changes that were happening, because basically you had legislators and business people and number crunchers making all these big decisions, and they were just handed down, and doctors and nurses were just running around going, I cannot believe the extra charting. How am I ever going to take care of the patient? And so
they weren't in the trenches to understand, right?
No, they really didn't understand. And right now, every nurse and doctor that I know over the age of 50 is frustrated with the amount of time they have to spend on documentation. Because most doctors and nurses sincerely love people, and they want to help people and bring about healing. But the obstacles nowadays to doing that on the inside of the healthcare system are really, really, really frustrating. It's really hard for doctors right now. A lot of them are talking about retiring early because they just can't keep up with everything.
And all the technological changes, too, then you have to adapt to that. And you're spending time then learning that new venue instead of spending with your patients, right? It's tough to find a balance. Did you have a crystallizing moment, though, when you decided, geez, I want to be a patient advocate, other than just all the red tape and everything else? Was there anything else that drove you to doing it?
Well, absolutely.
I'm wanting to do it, I should say.
I kind of got prepared for that by looking at what was going on inside of healthcare. But two other things happened. One, my father-in-law and mother-in-law wanted to take the whole family on a cruise to the Caribbean for their 50th wedding anniversary. And 2 days into the cruise, my father-in-law had a life-threatening event happen while we were on a cruise ship.
Oh, no.
Off the coast of Belize. And so to make a very long story short, over the next 6 weeks, he almost died multiple times. He had every complication known to man, even bringing him back to the U.S. I was at his side, and I just saw so many things that scared the dickens out of me. Honestly, I saw the worst and the best of modern healthcare. I saw how people can just slip through the cracks so easily, how people weren't able to see soft, subtle changes in his condition and anticipate them.
Was there any specific thing that you saw that really alarmed you? Was it just a general thing that you're talking
about? Well, one of the things that really alarmed me was when we brought him back from Belize in an emergent transfer. We got all the way back here after 12 hours, arrived at the emergency room of a local hospital at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I told this big, long, scary story about what had happened and how he almost died in Belize, and I was heaving a sigh of relief thinking, great, we're finally back to the U.S., and he's really going to get great care here. And the head of the emergency room was on that night, and he listened to my story and kind of dismissed me and went out and talked to the doctor and came back and said, well, your doctor says these things happen sometimes, so we're going to send you home on a subcutaneous medication. And
now this
see
is, you're back in the States when this happens.
I am back in the States. I just told this physician, my father-in-law couldn't even stand up without passing out. He had a blood clot from both ankles all the way up to his diaphragm, and I knew that from his symptoms. The hospital in Belize did not even have a working ultrasound machine. So when the doctor told me that he was going to send him home, I just really had to stand up and say, no, sorry, that's not going to happen. You call that doctor back and tell him that Carrie Dreher's in the emergency room with her father-in-law and she's being difficult and he needs to go to the interventional lab first thing tomorrow morning, which is what happened. He had a 4.5-hour procedure the next day that saved his life. So he just had so many complications, and this was our beloved patriarch. So 6 weeks later, he made it through after losing 35 pounds, and my husband looked at me and said, Terry, if you weren't there, he would have died. And I said, well, what do people do that don't have nurses or doctors in the family? And everybody looked at me and said, they die sometimes. And then shortly after this happened, I went back to work and actually almost got fired because I strongly advocated for a patient that I was taking care of. So that compelled me to go research this new industry and to spend thousands of dollars of my own money to get a certificate that trained me specifically how to be a private professional patient advocate. That was 4 years ago. And I started my own business, and I'm proud to say today that our company is ranked number 2 in the country.
Oh, that's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, and it all came because basically because of that crystallizing moment.
Absolutely.
Or moments with your parents. Okay, so they were fortunate enough on their 50th anniversary having everyone there, and one of their daughter being a nurse, that's very, very fortunate. What types of people are now, do you see coming to you that are hiring a professional advocate such as yourself?
Well, basically two different groups hire us. The first group, of course, is the patient. If the patient knows that they're frustrated, confused, they think their bills are wrong, or they don't know what to do and they want a second opinion, they're going to hire a professional, especially if they have the means to be able to hire somebody to cut through some of the red tape and take some of the aggravation off their shoulders. The second group are really adult children of aging parents that are in the height of their career, or they're in another part of the country and they can't come alongside their parents as they start having declining health issues. So we've had people hire us from other areas of the country to watch over family members, either siblings with mental illness issues or aging parents that were very insistent upon staying in their own home for as long as possible. And so those are great examples of the kinds of people that most often come to us.
Do you ever have people who actually had a situation with, say, a diagnosis? And okay. In other words, and then that can get to be very complicated, I would think.
Well, yes. In fact, we had a recent case that really illustrates your point, Jim. We had a podiatrist and his wife contact us after he had an acute neurological incident that landed him in a hospital and later a nursing home. So they contacted us, and this is a very vibrant man in his early 50s, and he
was in the medical profession.
He was, yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And he's hiring. Okay, go ahead.
Right.
This is very, I mean, this is sort of interesting.
Well, it's very interesting.
A medical person is hiring a medical person
right.
To be their advocate.
Oh, yeah.
That
and
kind of takes it to the other degree, doesn't it?
Well, it does. We get a lot of doctors and lawyers that hire us to advocate for their family members. But
anyway, I cut you off about the podiatrist's neurological disorder, you said?
So he did. He suddenly became unable to move his arms and legs.
Oh, my.
And so he was quickly diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a very difficult thing to diagnose. He had some scans, and we met him when he was in a rehab facility. And we came on board basically to help with benefits, maximize his insurance benefits, and talk to his insurance company and get the best physicians. So my nurse advocate, Mary Ellen, was able to really, really have some good results for him. She contacted a top neurologist at a downtown hospital who brought this gentleman in, and they did a whole new battery of tests and found that he did not have Guillain-Barré syndrome at all. He had had a stroke.
Oh, my goodness.
And so all this time, for weeks beforehand, he had been getting the wrong therapy, the wrong treatment. He had been misdiagnosed. And so we very quickly got him into the Rehab Institute of Chicago. We got him evaluated. And it's just been a much better story. We've been able to save a lot of money to get equipment for him that his wife was unable to get through the insurance company. And so this is a great case, and both of them are really absolutely thrilled. These are both really highly educated, passionate people about healthcare, and they were not able to untangle all the messes. And I think one of the issues for a lot of families is they're so emotional about it, they really can't think clearly when they start hitting a brick wall.
Whether you're a doctor or not, it doesn't matter. You're still in this, you're human, and you have this trauma going on. It's hard to think straight, as well as with the families, too. Mm-hmm. Treatment options. Mm-hmm. Do you look at alternative modes?
Oh, absolutely.
Because basically people head for the traditional type of methods.
Now, I spent almost 40 years in traditional health care.
That's what I was thinking. Your background as an ICU nurse, there isn't a lot of acupuncture going on in ICU, I don't think so.
Well, it depends on where you work.
Okay. Sure. So, fair enough. Okay. So I was just being glib.
I was able to work in a hospital that really encompassed a wide variety of different treatment modalities. And so I grew up the last 25 years of my career really seeing the advantage of naturopathic medicine, acupuncture, Reiki, mind-body medicine, and supplements. And this was a great preparation for me because I am a huge proponent of integrative medicine. And so, in fact, last weekend I went away to a two-day conference up in Wisconsin where I learned a lot with a lot of chiropractors and naturopaths about the different ways that we can help support people when traditional medicine has failed them. So I've heard a lot of really inspiring stories. So I'm even more pumped up about supplements helping the body heal itself. I'm not saying it's always a replacement, but it's a great option for people to know about, especially if they have an integrative mindset and are open to that. Yeah.
In your world, though, is it kind of the second option generally versus the traditional still at this point?
I think integrative medicine is getting more and more popular.
I like that word, too.
And it really brings everything together. I was kind of raised in traditional medicine to be very suspicious of chiropractic care and everything, but it has come so far over the past 30 years. It's just absolutely amazing. I think a great chiropractor with an in-depth knowledge of integrative medicine is worth their weight in gold. They can heal pain. They can improve people's quality of life in ways that patients have been unable to do in traditional medicine in some circumstances.
You know, I have a question for you now. In terms of the hospital setting, when you walk in as a nurse advocate or patient advocate for someone who is in the hospital, and you're not part of the family now.
Right.
Kind of an outsider coming in, so to speak. How do doctors and nurses look upon you?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question. I think the word advocate really frightens a lot of hospitals and doctors at first because they immediately think advocate is associated with something legal, like I'm there to somehow catch them in doing something, which couldn't be further from the truth. I love hospitals. I love doctors and nurses, and I know what their world is like. So when I come in and start asking the big questions, they know that I'm an ICU nurse, right away. And I know how to look at lab values in a way that family members are not able to. Mm-hmm. I ask questions that a family member would never know to ask. And when they see how much time I save them and the extra layer of education that I provide, I think most of them come around really, really quickly. Every nurse I've ever talked to totally gets that this is a very, very needed industry in healthcare right now.
Particularly if they're bogged down with all the charting all
day long. Absolutely.
So, yeah. It definitely can be kind of an middleman, more or less, for mm-hmm. for the family.
Exactly.
And the nurse.
And I do a lot of the work. I take a lot of the burden off care managers' shoulders, too, because I kind of bridge the gap between the hospital and the home. And all care managers are overburdened with trying to get people transferred back home or assisted living or independent living or even skilled nursing facilities after they leave the hospital. So they have limited amounts of time. And if I come in and say, look, I'm going to take some of this off your shoulders, I'm going to do the research, I'm going to help the family make a good choice quickly, they are overwhelmed with gratitude. They're really, really happy about that.
Well, that's good, because for a young industry, mm-hmm. it's good that it's being accepted at that level.
Oh, yeah, so. And we're very non-confrontational, too. I mean, they can tell right away that we're used to working on an equal level with physicians mm-hmm. and hospitals and nurses. And ICU nurses, I think, are particularly well prepared to be in this industry because we work so closely with doctors. I mean, any doctor that works in a hospital knows that having a good ICU nurse watching over their sickest patients is extremely valuable. They can't be there all the time, so we are.
Well, speaking of availability, mm-hmm. let's say that I hired you mm-hmm. and I'm in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
How available are you as a nurse advocate in terms of your availability?
I tell all of my nurse advocates that they are on 24-hour call for all their clients. And I have gotten out of bed at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning to go to the emergency room with my clients. My advocates only have generally no more than 3 or 4 clients at a time, so they can really deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we work on an hourly basis. So I've had clients that wanted me there for the entire day. So if they want to pay me an hourly rate for the entire day or even 12 hours, I'll stay there. I belong to them, so I work at their pleasure.
Boy, that's a full time. You must have a beeper on or something. my goodness. When you were called in, I'm curious, at 1 or 2 in the morning, mm-hmm. What was that? That was an ER situation where you went in?
Yes, this particular situation was an elderly man with advanced end-stage emphysema who lived at home with a BiPAP machine mm-hmm. Most of the day, and he started getting confused and agitated, so I knew that was a sign that his carbon dioxide level was going dangerously high. So when the caregiver called me and told me what was going on, I just told her to call 911, and I would meet her at the local hospital. And so I showed up at the local hospital emergency room with his medical profile in hand, and I talked to the doctor myself because the only family member was out of state, and I told his whole story, and I made sure that he was admitted as a full admission and not an observation status, and I just made sure the doctor had all the information. And I'll tell you, that emergency room doctor was extremely grateful that he was talking to a medical professional.
I bet, particularly having an advocate at 1 or 2 in the morning.
Yes, it's valuable.
Jeez, no kidding.
Yeah.
I am talking to Terry Dreyer, a career ICU nurse turned private professional patient advocate and owner of North Shore Patient Advocates, which has been operating in the Chicagoland area since 2011. And when we come back, we'll talk to Terry about your rights as a patient and tips and what to look for when you are a patient in a hospital. You're listening to Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich. We'll be back right after this. And that's music from The Fray, How to Save a Life. And a couple of years, that was the theme song from Grey's Anatomy. And I guess in a way, the first segment we've been talking about saving lives and helping people's lives when they need it, whether it's in a hospital setting or something that's medical. And my guest today, if you're just joining us, is Terry Dreher, a career ICU nurse turned private professional patient advocate and owner of North Shore Patient Advocates, and has been operating in the Chicago area since 2011. And you're listening to Word of Mouth. My name is Jim Wunderlich. And, you know, before the break, like I said, we were talking about some of these startling examples that you had, kind of what I would say really concrete examples with your father in Belize. And then we were also talking about the podiatrist who went through some issues, too. And I'd like to do it kind of, if I could, Terry, let's assume, if you don't mind, just kind of taking a scenario. Mm-hmm. And so let's assume a friend of mine has breast cancer mm-hmm. and was recently diagnosed and doesn't know what to do. So I advise her to call you mm-hmm. to be her patient advocate. Mm-hmm. So she's received her diagnosis, and I guess... And she's confused once you have the diagnosis. And this is where you come in because, you know, she's confused, maybe not frustrated yet, but just, you know, wondering about treatment plans because there's so many options now. And once you've stepped in, kind of take me through the process. What would you suggest as her patient advocate? And what's the first step, if you will?
Okay. Well, we've had several calls like that, people that have an upsetting diagnosis. And so the value that we add to situations like this is that we're objective, we're clinically competent and experienced, and we have a wide knowledge base about where the best hospitals are in the Chicagoland area for getting cancer treatment and diagnosis. So I always think it's a great idea to get a second opinion when you get a diagnosis like that. It's really important that patients have a close relationship with their oncologist and their oncological surgeon. And so what we do is research the options for them. We never advise, but we'll give them maybe three very good options and let them make the decision. And then we come alongside and support the decision and do an extra layer of teaching and just advocacy and interpretation of everything. And, of course, we'll go over the treatment plan and make sure that it's a standard-approved option and talk to them about other things that can help support that walk as they go through that kind of diagnosis. It's very, very frightening to get a diagnosis of cancer, and a lot of times people don't make rational decisions when they're feeling extremely fearful or overwhelmed, or just scared out of their minds. So it's really good to have a privately paid person come alongside and help make sense of it all.
Now, your first reaction was get a second opinion. Mm-hmm. Do you find people on the whole get second opinions, or are they more reticent or reluctant to do that?
I think a lot of patients decide who to go to based on the longstanding relationship they have with their physician. That may be a really good thing, mm-hmm. but I also have learned over the years that nice and competent are not always the same thing.
Hmm.
I know some of the finest doctors I've ever worked with were kind of difficult to work with, but that's something that you have to step back and be objective about. More and more doctors now are getting better training with interpersonal skills. And then I've seen a lot of doctors that were just the nicest guys in the world, but they didn't always, guide their patients in the right direction. And that actually happened with my father-in-law, too. He had a wonderful, wonderful, nice guy doctor, but that doctor missed things on 2-3 occasions that I saw, and probably other areas, too. So a lot of people really think their doctor's very good if he's a nice guy or she's a nice person. And nice and competent are not always the best thing. So we know how to go behind the scenes and look at their records and see if they've been ever sued before and see what other people are saying in the hospital that they work in, because we have so many connections in hospitals around the greater Chicago area, we can usually just pick up the phone and call one of our associates in these facilities and say, hey, tell me, if you had your mother or your brother or sister going through this diagnosis, who would you send them to?
Mm-hmm.
And if a doctor would advise another physician friend for his family member, I think that's pretty good endorsement of who the most highly thought of physicians are in that particular institution.
So you might be answering my next question, but sticking with this scenario with the breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so the friend receives the diagnosis that she has from has breast cancer from Dr. 1,
mm-hmm.
goes to Dr. 2 for the second opinion, like you're all for.
Mm-hmm.
And then treatment options sometimes can vary,
mm-hmm.
Particularly with breast cancer, everything from surgery to chemotherapy to radiation to the recent Time magazine was the cover story. We were talking about that a little bit before the show, where now the idea is, what if I decide to do nothing?
Mm-hmm.
There's research out there saying sometimes, you know, we can move too quickly. So with all these different options that are floating around out there,
mm-hmm.
as a patient advocate, I would think that it would be very difficult to help your patients make these incredible decisions.
Exactly, especially since we don't really advise. We just help do the research for people.
Mm-hmm.
So I may make a different decision than the patient would want to, but I have to help support them making the best possible decision on their behalf. The problem is that a lot of times patients and families, as I said before, make fear-based decisions, and those are usually not good decisions. So I've learned over time that your first chance at cancer treatment is usually your best chance. So if I were
to say that one more time? Here.
The first diagnosis you have
mm-hmm.
of cancer is usually the time that you want to be most aggressive about treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen a lot of people that tried to go the easier, softer, more emotionally palatable way of cancer treatment, and it had devastating end results. Because some of those lighter, softer treatments for cancer...
By softer treatment, what do you mean specifically?
Let's see. Vitamins, coffee, enemas.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
You know, dietary things like that. Those are great adjunct to cancer treatment. But if you're really serious about curing the disease, you need to go to people that are really, really highly thought of and can put the whole ball of wax together and give you your best options. Now, the patient still makes up their mind what they want to do, and we're there to help support whatever they decide. But I always want to make sure that people are making rational decisions based on having all of the education in front of them. So, like I said before, we give people two or three different really good options, and then it's their choice what they do. So,
do you think, have you found as a former ICU nurse and
mm-hmm.
now as a patient advocate,
mm-hmm.
have you found that there's more testing done that has to be done?
Well,
than necessary?
Well, a
does
lot
that
of,
get back to the charting that you were talking about before, just
yeah,
covering
it's,
your
it's
butt?
All about covering our butts, mm-hmm. and so that's part of the problem in modern healthcare, because
mm-hmm.
Really doctors and institutions are afraid of the lawyers, and so if doctors really want to cover their behinds with every little thing, they're going to order more tests. Unfortunately, that's not always a wise thing to do, but that's sort of the knee-jerk response of a lot of doctors to order absolutely everything. And that's a controversial.
So you can come in there, I would think, as a patient advocate. Do you come in situations like, hey, we don't need another test? Or, again, you don't advise, but maybe in terms of the research that you can display to your client?
Absolutely. We can give them research studies, and we can help them figure out pros and cons, because some of these tests have potential really bad outcomes if they have kidney and liver problems. So if you look at the whole patient scenario and you know that this particular test could damage their kidneys in some way, you have to advise the patient about that. Or we call them clients. Not, they're not really patients, because
right.
we don't do hands-on care. They're our clients.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Terry Dreyer, ICU nurse for 40 years, I believe you said,
mm-hmm.
in the first segment,
mm-hmm.
and also now has North Shore Advocates, and she is a patient advocate. because of all the healthcare complexities that are occurring in our world today. So I want to get to something that you touched on before, and we really stuck mostly with the hospital and those types of situations. But the other thing that the patient advocate can do that you mentioned in segment number one was helping adult children with their parents.
Right.
And do you want to amplify that a little bit more?
Well, sure. A lot of aging seniors right now have children that are in the prime of their careers. They're baby boomers or a little bit before baby boomers who are just super, super busy. They're taking care of their families growing up. They're kind of what we call a sandwich generation. They're stuck between priorities with their own children and getting them through college and working hard and the money and everything. And at the same time, their parents are getting weaker. Their health is deteriorating. They're having sometimes cognitive deficits. They can't remember things as well. It's kind of hard to look at talking to your own parents about taking their car keys away sometimes.
Now, you've been in that situation, then, huh?
Absolutely have been. And it's a heart-wrenching decision for people that you have grown up seeing as the parent. And yet when you know that your parent has serious memory problems and gets lost just going around the block, it's really not safe for them to continue to drive. But the parent will sometimes insist upon keeping those car keys. And what do you mean I can't drive? Who do you think you are? So sometimes aging seniors will listen to a nurse when they won't always listen to their children.
I would think, you know, one thing that we didn't mention, you touched on, because we talked about insurance and that, I don't think we talked about in terms of is if I were to hire you as a patient advocate, is that covered under insurance then, my insurance?
No, it's
not.
How
does that work?
Yeah, in a perfect world, it probably should be, but I don't think the allegiance issues would be as clear cut if insurance paid us. I don't really ever want to take insurance because I don't want to be beholden to the insurance companies at all.
I see.
And so I'm all about the patient. I will always be all about the patient. And so I don't want to have to do a little check in my heart and say, oh, what's the consequence if this insurance company gets mad at me? I don't get paid by doctors. I don't get paid by hospitals. I don't get paid by insurance companies. Patients, clients pay us directly.
One thing we haven't talked about, and so you get paid directly.
Mm-hmm.
Are your services expensive then?
They're affordable for most people.
Okay.
And we put together packages based on what people's ability to pay is. But most people really are not wealthy people. We rarely get wealthy clients that can contract us. Most of our clients are just in a bad situation. They think that a family member may actually die, and they're desperate for really good health care. And so to them, it's a huge high value. People tell us all the time that we save their family members' lives.
Well, what's more important than your health, right?
Right.
So, one thing we have kind of talked a little bit about, we've been talking about where it's gone pretty smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any obstacles or challenges that you've faced being a patient advocate?
With hospitals?
Well, you've said it coming in as a hospital, there hasn't been really any problems. Mm-hmm. But do you find any other obstacles with family members? Or it sounds like it's been pretty smooth sailing in terms of your ability to be able to basically navigate families, navigate hospitals, and that type of thing, too.
Well, one of the things.
What are the challenges of your job? Maybe that's a better question.
Well, it's not so much challenging when we're standing up for patients' rights to hospitals and physicians. The thing that probably makes me the saddest is when adult children will not spend the money on things that their parents need, because I think some of them are financially stressed too, and they stop and wonder, will I have any inheritance left if I do these services? They're obviously going to be expensive, and that bothers me from an ethical standpoint. I keep wanting to stand up and say to the adult children, it's their money. You know, it is their money. They need to have that money spent for quality of life. But oftentimes, one of the adult children will have financial power of attorney, and sometimes I actually see borderline elder financial abuse with withholding money. The aging parents actually need that. That makes me sad.
So that obviously is a challenge that you have on your front. Yeah. In terms of challenges too, you know, we've talked, you know, have been talking about the kind of stressful incidences. Have there been any kind of amusing incidences? This sounds like a pretty serious business, which it is. But are there anything that that you've had some like lighthearted or amusing incidents that have occurred in as being a patient advocate?
Well, we always have little things going on back and forth with our clients, laughing at themselves and laughing at us, and we try to keep it very light and lighthearted. I know when to get really serious about a patient safety issue, but I think it's wonderful to be able to just be with people and learn their sense of humor. Probably the one that I have the most laughable moments is with old men, grumpy old men.
Just like the movie, huh?
Yeah, curmudgeons, I call them. So, yeah, I've seen a few curmudgeons that give me all the reasons why they know more than I do about healthcare, and I have to bite my tongue a lot sometimes. Generally, I do pretty well with grumpy old men. Most of the time, they're just, they look angry, but they're really frightened. It's a loss of control thing, so that's hard.
I am talking to Terry Dreyer, a career ICU nurse turned private professional patient advocate and owner of North Shore Patient Advocates. You're listening to Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich. We'll be back right after this. Yeah, music. That's the theme from ER. You might remember that, George Clooney. And you were giving me, you're furrowing your brow, so I think you remember George Clooney on that show.
Yeah, I absolutely do. I love that show.
And if you're just joining us, I'm talking to Terry Dreyer, a private professional patient advocate and owner of North Shore Patient Advocates. And you're listening to Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich, and I tell you what, Terry, before we go, we've touched on so many things, patients' rights, and just numerous things. I want to ask you this, though. Terry, what are a few tips, and when people go into the hospital, they're nervous, anxious, and also maybe some real practical tips. What are some tips on how to prevent problems from occurring when you're a patient in the hospital?
Well, the first thing I always tell people is going into the hospital and coming out of the hospital are the two times that most medical error can occur just because of lack of communication. So when you go into a hospital, make sure that you have written down in your hand your real correct list of medications and your medical history. It's hard to get all the electronic health records out of the cloud right now, and it'll save the doctor a lot of time if you have all that information there and you're very respectful with the doctor's time. So if he's got accurate information, you tell him what you're presenting to the hospital with, he can make a quick and accurate diagnosis and you can be treated aggressively right away. The other thing is hospitals are places where a lot of infections are today, drug-resistant microorganisms. So make sure nobody touches you unless you see them foam in, foam out, or use gloves. Make sure that doctors don't put their stethoscopes on your chest without watching them wipe them off with a germicidal wipe. And make sure that...
That would be awkward, I would think.
Well,
you know?
I think...
Well, but it's more for your own good, but right.
It is. It's your body. So you want to make sure that infections from the next room down the hall with the isolation cart, doctors aren't taking that stethoscope and coming into your room. I mean, infections are a huge, huge problem in hospitals today. Infections, medication reactions, falls, confusion, lack of sleep, those kinds of things are really big problems when you come into the hospital. So be very careful about all those issues.
Those are some great tips. Thank you. I'll be looking at that stethoscope from now on, that's for sure. So one last question before we go. So what do you enjoy the most about being a patient advocate? I mean, you were an ICU nurse for 40 years. Now you've been a patient advocate. You have your own company. What's the most gratifying part of it?
Oh, my gosh. I tell everybody I know that this is the best job I've ever had. This is the purest form of nursing I have ever seen because we completely belong to the patient, the client. They pay us, so we're completely, totally focused on them. They are the center of the model of healthcare completely. There's no conflicting issues in place, and we just serve at their will. So I just love this. After 40 years, this is it for me. I've always been a natural patient advocate, but now I get to do it for a living. And I love mentoring my other advocates and showing them how to be great advocates as well.
Terry Dreher, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much. If you wish to contact Terry and learn more about the North Shore Patient Advocates, visit her website at www.northshore.org. ERN, that's one word, I'll say it again, www.northshoreern.com. And thank you for tuning in. I hope you drop by again next Thursday at 3 p.m. when I talk to another captivating guest on Word of Mouth.